Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe in downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. If you missed our number one, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search the Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. We say happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there celebrating. And hopefully if you're watching or listening to us, we appreciate that as well, being a part of your special day. We celebrate moms each and every day, but especially here on Mother's Day. But we'll begin hour number two. We got a fun second hour for you guys. Jonathan Von Tobel, senior NBA analyst here for VSiN, will join us in 30 minutes to help us break down these NBA games. And let's start hour number two with the NBA, Michael, and get to what's on your mind. What about the association are you thinking about this morning?
Well, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers, especially the mother of my family, Millie, who's done an incredible job of raising two boys while I was working all the time, and appreciate all those efforts. And the mothers that aren't with us, we certainly miss them and remember them today. But I thought yesterday, I just sat there, I sat my fat butt on the couch and I watched the NBA, both games, right? Mm-hmm. And I watched them Friday night too, in between serving Bill Berman drinks, which is, you know, the perfect thing to do.
It's been busy.
As he keeps saying, can I help you? But there's never any help. Anyway, because he has a drink in his hand. But besides that problem, the reality here is the NBA has becoming, back to when I was growing up, the 80s, and the physicality, and you're asking yourself, isn't that a foul? And so I started, after watching the games, I did a little research, and what's on my mind is apparently the NBA has told teams the path plays, and what that means is the defender now is allowed to maintain the path he's on. Earlier in the year, the offensive player could just dribble into the defender and the contact would be deemed a foul. Now they're saying that's not. They're saying they're not calling that anymore, which explains a lot of the things that I thought were fouls that aren't fouls anymore. Hmm. Now, one of the things that's pretty clear is they don't call this on Alexander, right? Joe Gobbs, the official, I think John Gobble, his name is. He called three fouls in the fourth quarter, all of them on the player guarding Gilgeous Alexander on this clear path that was supposed to not be called. So there's a little bit of, like, some players are getting it. Luka's not getting it at all. Luka has, I mean, he's getting the crap beat out of him. But I think, to me, that the NBA's physicality that they've allowed to return to the game, I kind of enjoy watching it. You know, I kind of enjoy watching it. And now that it's been explained to me what they're not calling, I understand it better. I just thought it was based on the recklessness and you know, was it the home crowd and all that? But I enjoyed it. I thought the Dallas-Oklahoma game yesterday was physical as hell. I thought they were too harsh on Luka. For a superstar, they made that guy, they beat that guy up like crazy. But this is why they're doing it.
It really has been a turn that's happened, I think, since post All-Star break, but it's ratcheted up even to another level during the postseason, because right before the All-Star break, I'm sure you remember this, like, your guy Embiid went for 70, Luka went for 70 like a week later, and then people were asking, it's like, hey, like, what's with all the scoring? Are they, like, the officiating the game poorly? And the NBA secretly, they didn't announce anything. They just secretly said, we're changing everything. We're going to let guys actually defend. We're going to let the physicality happen on the perimeter, because they let physicality in the post, but nobody throws the ball to the post anymore, so it's almost pointless. But on the perimeter, no. You could never touch any. You could never touch anyone on the perimeter over the last handful of years. It's like, man, how do you play defense in this league? But then all of a sudden, they started to let that stuff happen, which is why post All-Star break, there was a run for, I think, about 10 to 14 days after the All-Star break, where, like, almost every under was cashing because the market hadn't caught up. The market wasn't aware that the NBA just flipped the switch overnight and said, we're going to let physicality happen. And then the market started to catch up a little bit. But even in the postseason, we've seen quite a bit of unders just because of familiarity and playing the same team over and over, but also they just let so much physicality happen, which I agree with you. As a fan of the sport, I love it. I love the physicality. I love making the guys have to work, showing a little bit of resistance on defense. Now, the problem comes in to where there's certain crews that are still calling the old way. like Tony Brothers' crew, they're still calling the touch fouls. So I as a bettor, you get a little confused of, hey, like, what should we be paying attention to? What should be, I guess, for the Tony Brothers game, bet the overs, perhaps. Maybe that's the look. But some crews are still calling the pre-All-Star break stuff, and most crews, though, are calling the post-All-Star break, where they're letting physicality happen on the perimeter.
Yeah, and I mean, look, what you always want in officiating, and you don't get it in the NBA, you don't get it in the NFL, is a level of consistency where 100%. You know what to be expected and how to be called, and you don't get that. Like today, we're going to see a physical game out of Indiana and the Knicks. I mean, that game was really physical. I don't think it was a foul. They didn't call it on Brunson on that three-pointer he tried to launch, but there were some times I thought guys go to rim. I thought Maxey never got a call going to the rim. But now that I understand this pathway here now, the way they want to call it, okay, fine. I get it. So move forward, and it goes on. But, you know, to me, it's made the games – the last thing you want is those ticky-tack calls. And I think, you know, what Dallas was able to do is they adjusted their game to it, right? And I think Boston was – my question watching these games, Femi – and I loved it when Hubie Brown, when they were talking about Lou Alcindor, formerly Lou Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mm-hmm. He was an assistant coach on that Milwaukee coaching staff, and they were talking and reminiscing about the great Kareem. And, like, where would Kareem play today? Like, where would Kareem play today? Like, would they throw the ball into the post anymore? You know?
I hope so.
You know, it's all pick and roll. Yeah, you know, I would think so, because it's all, you know, every time I went in the post, it was a good chance it was going to get a play, you know, it was going to be a score.
You know what they would make Kareem do? They'd make him develop a 3-point shot, is what they would do. I think they would say, hey, Kareem, like, we know you're big, you're tall, but develop a three, even though what you're doing, the sky hook is automatic, but develop a 3-point shot, because three is greater than two. I think that's how they would make him play. Like you think about with all these guys, it's like they would just make them shoot more threes. That's what everyone's doing. Just when in doubt, shoot a three.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I watch these games, and when you get behind, I know the three can get you back in the game, but the three can also extend. I thought it happened to Cleveland last night, right? Mm-hmm. Cleveland started launching threes, bad threes, right? I think there is a quality shot element that you have to really look at as a fan. Like an open three, okay, you miss it. Got it. But when you're trying to launch a three that's a contested three, is that, and you're behind in the game, is that really the right shot? I mean, look, Boston, when you watch that game, the Mavs were going to get into the paint. The Mavs spent, you know, they took 91 shots inside the 3-point line, whereas Oklahoma City took 81. Now, Oklahoma City was 10 for 30 from the 3-point line. And the Mavericks were 11 for 33. Now, a lot of that was because they got second chance with offensive rebounding and all that. But the reality here is you got to try to pound some teams a little bit. Look, let's face it, this interesting play by the Thunder in terms of fouling, and the Mavericks got away with it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they got away with it because Lively ended up making four in a row, and he was 8 for 12 from the free throw line. But as a team, they were 16 for 25, which really put them in a tough spot.
Yeah, if you can go ahead and identify someone who's not good at free throw shooting before that 2-minute little window that you can't do it, you should probably, to get back into the game, it helps get the other team out of rhythm offensively. There's a lot of stoppages. I think that's certainly a way to do that, to go ahead and stop the clock there. I think that we would just see a lot more. The biggest indicator for me that the game changed, and this is not breaking any news or anything like that, but when you watch transitions, you watch a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2, and back in the day, people would go towards the basket. Now you see guys flank out to the corner to go shoot it, to set up for a corner three. And it's like, buddy, you got numbers. Get to the damn hoop. But everybody wants the three in transition. Yeah. And that's how they play now, which, I mean, hey, it's, you know, to each their own. I guess the math is what the math is. But I just find it funny if you can get an easy two, I guess three is greater, well, but you're still shooting.
Who took the shot? Well, who made the shot for the Pacers the other night?
Nembhard?
It was a clutch three, and it was...
Yeah.
I mean, and it was from way out. And I turned to a very drunk Bill Berman and said, if he would have shot that in high school, he'd have gotten benched.
Yep.
Like, think about it, right? You know, like, that shot would have been, you're coming off. I mean, when I grew up, you're coming off the court. He made it, so they celebrated.
When he shot that, I was like, what are we doing? The shot clock was going down, so I guess he had to shoot it, but it's like a 35 footer and it's just nothing but nylon. Kudos to him for making it, but my goodness, that was a horrendous possession that they got bailed out on, and they won the game. And that's how it works.
They got bailed out.
What do you think happens though?
Give the Knicks credit, you know, where they have tonight. Well, they don't have Anobi. They don't have him in the game. I mean, that's going to be a hard one, right? Another game they're going to play. I mean, but they're resilient. I mean, let's face it. They are so resilient. They're not going to affect them at all in terms of they don't have this player or that player. you know? And so I think to me, you know, Alex Burke returned from the unknown to play 21 minutes. He got 14 points for him. Yeah. I mean, look, Alex Burke, whatever you want to say about the guy, I've watched him. He was a Sixer. He can score. Now, he's not a great defender. That's why he doesn't play a lot. But, you know, he can score. So between he and McBride, that's where they did. I mean, what they, you know, Hartenstein played 39 minutes the other night. 39 minutes for the big guy. Hart had 18 rebounds. He played, he got 5 minutes rest, which is typically he never does.
Yeah, 43 minutes is like vacation for Josh Hart.
I think to me is if Brunson shoots 10 for 26 again, and that's, and the Pacers were barely able to come out of it, then you got to believe the Knicks, he's not going to go 10 for 26 again. And I think ultimately that gives him a chance to, that gives them a chance, right? I think that does. And, you know, look, I mean, the Pacers, their defensive effort, you have to wonder if they can, if they're going to be able to play good defense. I mean, the Knicks were 14 for 27 from the 3-point line.
Yeah, no, I think
the about that. I mean, they shot 51.9% from the 3-point, and they lost, but they did.
The market's betting the Knicks today. This was 6 yesterday, 5.5 when I woke up this morning, and now it's sitting at 5 pretty much across the board. DraftKings still has a 5.5, so if you like the Knicks, DraftKings is your home to bet the New York Knicks. But market seems to be thinking that this is going to be a close game, and it's hard to argue. Every Knicks game is a close game, and I think that we're going to see this one once again go down to the wire. I think taking the 5.5 is a solid look here in this game, despite the Knicks being a little bit shorthanded. I think we'll get a close one out there at the Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. All right, on the other side, little Bettor's Choice. Our producer Elliot has put together some good options. We'll discuss it next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Timmy Abefefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, this is only a limited time, so you got to listen up. We're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. Normally, it's $240. You can now get it for just $199. Sign up today, and we'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code Lombardi. I mean, this is going to carry you all the way through the PGA season. We got the PGA Championship coming up next weekend, through the Stanley Cup Final, the NBA Finals, through all of baseball season, an NFL, March Madness, and we'll be back here again next year with 2 more months on top of that. You're going to get the 19 hours of live programming. You're going to get the betting splits, the betting systems, everything your heart desires to become a better bettor. Become a better bettor at VSiN.com/subscribe. 14 months for VSiN Pro, only $199. Use promo code Lombardi when you sign up. I mean, I can't think of a better deal than that. We'll take advantage of it here on this day. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line.
You know, Femi, I think to me it's really important that, you know, when you understand and define what you're trying to accomplish. And in the betting market, you are no different than an analyst in a in the stock market. And so if you don't have enough data, if you're not going through as much information as possible, that was what I really took that when I read Billy Walter's book 2 months ago about how much time he was spending reading through all the clips of local papers, reading, gaining as much information, sorting it through and having it at his fingertips, not necessarily listening to it, but collecting it and then processing it. And I think that's really, if you want to be successful in betting and you want to make a little bit of pizza money, you're going to need to get some advice, because I can promise you, I'm on top of the NFL every single day and it's hard. And if you have other jobs, fortunately, it's my job to do that. But if you have other jobs, you know how hard it is to stay on top of that.
Yeah, that's perfect. Like for most people who have jobs who are just doing this as a recreational thing on the side, like you don't have the time to network and learn other bettors and say, hey, you tackle college football, I'll tackle NFL, you tackle NBA. We can do all that stuff for you. So VSiN.com/subscribe, $199. It's less than 50 cents a day. Go ahead and help yourself out and subscribe at VSiN.com/subscribe. All right. You know, Michael, our producer, Elliot Bowman, is always putting together games for us. And one of our favorite games that we like to play, Bettor's Choice. This one is an NBA-NFL hybrid across a bunch of futures markets. Also have some props involved as well. But the first option is the New York Knicks to win the Eastern Conference at plus 450. Or would you rather bet on the Baltimore Ravens to win the AFC at plus 475? Which one would you like to choose?
I think I would rather take the Knicks at plus 450. I think it's going to be hard for Baltimore, and I don't say that lightly. I think obviously they have the best, the MVP from two years, even though the guy, many thought he might be a wide receiver coming out. Nobody's brought that up in a while, have they? You know, nobody gets paid for that. If I'd have said that, I would have been ripped for like months, years. You know, I'm still getting blamed I'm still getting blamed for Jamarcus Russell, even though I wasn't in the room. I mean, you know, meanwhile, the MVP of the league twice was called a wide receiver and nobody's mentioned a word to it. But I think there's some concerns about Baltimore in this sense. There's going to be a transitional period, right? They're going to have to get a new right tackle, whether it's Rosengarten or someone else, right? They're going to have to count on Ronnie Stanley playing at a much higher level. They were able to get his reduction of his salary down, right? And so they've got a lot of missing pieces there. I think the addition of Derrick Henry changes their offense into more under center, which I think is a good thing. But defensively, here's the concern. We talked about Mike McDonald going to Seattle and how I thought that was a positive. And Zach Orr only coached in the National Football League for 3 years. He played, but he's only coached for 3 years. And now he's got this huge, huge hole to step into in the shoes of Mike McDonald, who did a wonderful job. That's going to be a hard thing to do. And I think they're going to count on a couple players. They got to count on Nate Wiggins as a rookie to be good. They got to count on Trenton Simpson, who they drafted in the third round, to fill the Patrick Queen hole. And they've got to duplicate the pass rush. You know, and I think ultimately they ended up in 21, they drafted Adafe Owe. I think that's how you say his name.
Owe.
And he was out all of last year, but they still picked up his fifth year, which tells you they believe he's played 13 games in his NFL career in 4 years. He's got 13 sacks. So you know that he's done a good job of when he's on the field. The problem is he's never on the field. So I think there's a lot of concerns. Since he's going to be better, Pittsburgh's going to be better. So I like the Knicks here more because of the uncertainty of how Baltimore's going to be able to handle the North.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. I'll put it this way. The top dog in the AFC is Patrick Mahomes. I'm not trying to go up against him anytime soon. The top dog in the Eastern Conference is the Boston Celtics, which, as good as they can be, they show you sometimes a little bit of a lackadaisical effort. And if they do that against a Knicks team in the Eastern Conference Finals, a tough-minded team, that could be a long series. So I'd roll my dice with the New York Knicks to win the East at plus 450. All right, this next one, Dallas Mavericks to win the Western Conference plus 250, San Francisco 49ers to repeat as NFC champions plus 250.
Well, I think it's always hard to repeat. I think the NFC, it's hard. I'll take the Mavericks at plus 250. I think to me, to win the West, they have a chance, right? It's going to be hard, but they have two incredibly great players in Luka and Kyrie. We didn't talk enough about Kyrie. We didn't pay enough respect to Kyrie so far in this hour. We did in the first hour, but Kyrie was unbelievable. I mean, look, for all the conversation of the off-the-field antics and his quotes, the guy is playing at a high, high level. And if they're going to continue to attack Luka the way they have in the Thunder defensively, you know, and you leave a legitimately great, and I'm not talking about a good, I'm talking about an elite one-on-one player like Kyrie Irving. That left-handed shot he made the other day, you know, Femi, I'm sure you've made that before in your life, but it probably took a lot of time to get it done. I mean, that was an incredible shot, right? And so I think to me, I would go there. I love the 49ers, but I think the West is going to be tougher. I think the NFC is going to be tougher. Green Bay, Detroit, right? Philadelphia. I think it's a hard, hard thing. It's not a knock at San Francisco. I just think the level has been raised.
Yeah, I made that shot in the driveway with nobody guarding me before. I don't know if it counts for the same as Kyrie Irving.
Well, it counts. Yeah, you've made it.
Yeah, hang the banner. I would reluctantly go Niners with that one at plus 250. The price is really short, but I just think that the winner of T-Wolves Nuggets is going to win the Western Conference. That's just my opinion, so I wouldn't want to bet that plus 250 on Dallas. This next one, Boston Celtics to win the championship minus 120. They're already odds on. Or the Atlanta Falcons to win the NFC South at minus 130.
Oh, I'm taking the Celtics. I have no belief that the Falcons are going to win the South. None. Because they haven't improved defensively. They have no pass rush. They were 29th in the league in creating turnovers. Like, you're not going to outscore people. We know this. The Miami Dolphins have proven it. You got to win with defense. And I think the Atlanta Falcons and Super Bowl winning general manager Terry Fontenot have over-evaluated their team. And they've let 2 years in a row, they've let an elite defensive lineman. Think about this for just a second, if you're a Falcon fan. Just a second, think about this. If Super Bowl winning general manager Terry Fontenot would have taken Jalen Carter last year, and then he, instead of Bijan Robinson, I love Bijan Robinson, but Algier is a good player. I'm not saying he's Robinson, but he's a good player. But just say he would have taken Carter. And then say this year he would have taken Murphy or Latua. Now you got a team. Mm-hmm. And then you've had Cousins. Now you got a team. Now you got two elite defensive linemen in your front, whether it's an end or whether it's a tackle. But again, he takes offensive players as if we're playing 7-on-7. Yeah. No chance. You're not getting me to bite on Atlanta. No chance. No. And it has nothing to do with them not hiring Belichick. It has everything to do with their team building.
I think after this season, you're going to have to start calling him NFC South winning general manager Terry Fontenot after this season.
No, I'll never do it. Look, you know, people say to me all the time, like Millie always says to me all the time, why do you root against the Sixers? I said, I don't root against them. I just know the outcome. Like, I just know what the outcome is going to be. Like, I'm not a fan. I know the outcome. They're not going to win, right? I know the outcome of Atlanta. They're not going to win the South. I know it. Like, they're not good enough. They have too many holes defensively. I spent my life looking at teams. Like, they're not good enough to, you got to win with defense. You know, Todd Bowles will create, and when all of a sudden, we got amnesia here. When has Kirk Cousins become a primetime great player? I'll wait for your answer.
You'll be waiting a long time on that one. Although I think the Falcons will win the South this year.
That's gotten thrown under the carpet. Nobody talks about that anymore, do they?
No. Because we all watched Quarterback on Netflix last year, and we all grew to love Kirk Cousins. So nobody brings up the record in the postseason or in the primetime games. Now we like Kirk Cousins. Kirko chains. This next one, Denver Nuggets to win the series against the T-Wolves, plus 165. Bengals to win the AFC North at the same price.
I'll take the Bengals. I love the Bengals. I really do. Because I like Lou Amoromo. I'm not in love with what they do offensively. You know, I think to me, they got to play with more power. I'm worried about their offensive line. Is it Mims at right tackle, or is it going to be Trent Brown, who's very talented? Trent Brown is extremely talented, but Trent Brown is lazy, and Trent Brown doesn't always love football. Concerning, right? But with Burrow back, Burrow can move this thing. And what I can't see happening, and if I were to advise Zach Taylor, their head coach, Zach, we can't start slow. You better upgrade the preseason a little bit, because you can't be 3-4 in week 8 of the season.
What we say our rule is, we can't judge the Bengals until Halloween. Like, we made that a pact on the GM shuffle, because they start so slow that they're not fully formed in September just quite yet. All right, we'll have JVT, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, join us next to break down the NBA playoffs here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you go over to VSiN.com, you'll check out all of the great NBA analysis that we have here. Our very own Jonathan Von Tobel, our senior NBA analyst, wrote about the Pacers and Knicks series. Make sure you check that out before making your wagers for today's game that tips off 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific time. Check out everything NBA, NHL. We got EPL. We got NFL stuff on there. VSiN.com today. It's a new revamped website and looks awesome. We encourage everyone to visit it. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, on the great state of New Jersey, and joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, none other than VSiN senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, thanks for waking up with us this morning on the Lombardi Line. Before we get into today's games, yesterday's game, Celtics take the 2-1 series lead. Mavericks gut one out against OKC to win that one, 105-101 to take a 2-1 series lead as well. What were your takeaways from what we saw yesterday in the association?
Yeah, I think the Mavericks-Thunder series, guys, is pretty fascinating, right? Because if you look at what has transpired over the last couple of games, it's been what we were worried about for the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Mavericks have grabbed over 34% of offensive rebounds available to them. Those are generating second-chance opportunities. Those are keeping a small team off of the glass. Like, that's really something we were kind of like projecting for OKC, right? Some of the bigger teams were going to be able to do this against them. And it's something that they statistically have willingly given up because they know they have strengths in other areas. In fact, John Hollinger, I would stress anybody go read his write-up there on The Athletic. He put it up about 3 or 4 days ago. but just about how we have these two teams, OKC and New York, who are the opposites of each other, right? New York loves offensive rebounding, relies on it. OKC willingly gives it up because of their lack of size, but it's starting to burn them over the last couple of games. And so you wonder if what the adjustment's going to be for a team that doesn't have a lot of a size to adjust to, right? And that's going to be the other problem. Josh Giddey, their power forward, essentially, who gives them some size and some rebounding guys, he's become unplayable. Again, 13 minutes last time out. You're putting Daniel Gafford on him. He's a non-threat on offense. So the Thunder have to really ask themselves some questions as to what they're going to do here as they move forward. And I think that's the big one. And that's why I find that one more interesting, because you expect they're going to be better on offense. You expect guys like Shea and Jelly Williams to be more efficient on offense as well. But that lack of size is starting to turn up, and you wonder if that's going to eventually burn them over the course of the series. But I'd add really quickly, market doesn't seem to mind. Those who set the market have been in on OKC since this thing started. The series price went in OKC's favor. Game one, the line move went in their favor. Game two, the line move went in their favor. And here we are again with this line for game four, already moving in their favor by a half point, depending on where you look.
JBT, Femi and I have been talking quite a bit about the officiating and how they're calling the game and how much physicality is within the game. I mean, what Dort has done to Luka, I thought he should have fouled out in the first quarter, let alone it took him to the fourth quarter to foul out. But what's your perception of how they're calling it now?
I mean, it's twofold, right, Michael? First off, I'd say it's enjoyable. It's cool to watch this level of physicality transpire in front of us, in the NBA, especially for those who, right, really yearn for yesteryear when it comes to the ability to play like that in the postseason. It really captures a lot of those people to watch this sort of play. Having said that, it does make it interesting when you do see, I would say, a smattering of the way it used to be called, right? Before that kind of February-ish time when they really started to change the way they called these games. You know, for example, on Friday night, the Minnesota Timberwolves are a team that I think benefit greatly from the way that these games have been called, or lack thereof, right? They're overtly physical. They can get after you, grab, tug, do whatever. And it really helps them defensively. We saw that in game one. We saw it to a point in game two where Jamal Murray got so frustrated, he threw stuff onto the court, right? But you saw in game three that when that whistle was a little bit tighter, all of a sudden, Jaden McDaniels has a third foul in the second quarter with about 9 minutes left to go. You're in the bonus with like 6 minutes left to go in the first quarter. You have the most fouls called in that game, and all of a sudden, you're not able to play the way that you want to. And I don't think it's the only reason they lost, because their offense was abysmal in that game on Friday. But it does change the way that you want to do it. So, Michael, overall, I think it's a positive. But I do think these officials do have to be consistent, because you're getting these guys used to the way that they're calling these games. And to change even just a little bit all of a sudden is going to throw some of these teams like Minnesota and others, the way they play defensively, off a little bit. But I think overall it's a positive with the way that they've been calling these games.
We're hanging out with Jonathan Von Tobel, VC senior NBA analyst. Yes, you took the words right out of my mouth, Michael. We got the extender in the building in Minneapolis.
Thank you, Femi. There has to be a follow through here. Okay, handicap the Denver Minnesota game with Mr. Scott Foster as the lead official.
Yeah, it seems like you're going to have to really, let's say you're going to have to turn it up on offense, because I don't know if you're going to get away with with the way you've been playing the first two games of the series, knowing the way that we tend to see these games get called. And you're going to have to, be on your P's and Q's in terms of not getting frustrated, right? Because we, of course, know how Scott Foster operates, too. So for me, and I want to be really clear, because I wrote about this, too. I don't want to blame Friday on the officiating, because if you looked at the way that they played offensively, an offensive rating well under 95 for Minnesota, if you look at the numbers for the role players, if you will, I think it was Mike Conley, Naz Reid, Jaden McDaniels, and there's one other name that I'm forgetting. Oh, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, guys. Mm-hmm. A combined 2 of 11 from three-point range for the Minnesota Timberwolves. That's 18%. That can't happen, especially in your home building. Those things need to be better. You cannot have an offensive rating of 85 in half-court situations if you're going to win these games. And that was part of the interesting part about the first two games of the series, right, was it looked like they had figured it out on offense. In game one, they averaged over 2 points per possession in putting Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic in pick and rolls. They were going after Murray. They had put him in over 50 ball screen actions in game two. Like, they were going after him. That's got to be better. If you're getting open shots, you have to knock them down, and you've got to be better on offense, as do the other role players. So I think the officiating is going to matter. Obviously, Scott Foster is a name we're all going to remember and know, and I think that's going to have some impact on this game. But at the end of the day, officiating aside, Minnesota's got to be better on offense if they're going to win this game. And shockingly enough, right, 2-1, game four at home, it's a really intense game for Minnesota. You could argue a must win, because you don't want to be tied 2-2 after losing two home games going back to Denver.
Yeah, it's like you stole home court advantage, and to give it right back, that would be not ideal for the Timberwolves. Also important to note, Jamal Murray, maybe those extra days off, getting three yes. days in between, helped out with Jamal Murray being a little bit more explosive in Game 3 than what we saw in Denver. We're hanging out with VSiN senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel here on the Progressive Guest Line. Check out JVT and all the work he does on VSiN.com, as well as VSiN Primetime weekdays, 6 to 9 Eastern Time here on the Sports Betting Network. How about what we're going to see in Indianapolis? Tony Brothers is the officiating crew. He was the one that did Game 3 between the T-Wolves and Nuggets. Now he's doing Game 4. Knicks Pacers. The market has since now bounced back to Indiana. We're back to 5.5, total 219. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, so I took a piece 5.5. Oh, it'll probably close like 5.5. I don't think we get back up to 6, but we'll see what happens here. But to your point, I think that Tony Brothers being there might help New York a little bit. Look, Jalen Brunson likes to go for those foul calls. He likes to operate in that half-court area and try to get after guys and get to the free throw line. It's part of his game, and that might help him out if Brothers going to call a tight matchup here out there in Indiana. But Femi, overall, I think when you look at this, I just don't trust Indiana defensively. We haven't seen any indication that we should at this point right now. And to ask a team like this to win by a margin is, to me, I think it's not the right thing to do. So this could be the third straight game I bet on New York in this series. I think that the market has gotten a little too strong with its rating here for Indiana. And it's totally understandable to an extent, right? Like, New York's got all these injuries. You know, you're on the road. All of those sort of things do make sense. But when you're still, like, guys, they were trailing by 9 points in the fourth quarter to a team that had six dudes playing, essentially. Like, this team is really struggling on that end of the floor to get stops consistently. I, for one, am just going to be on the side of asking the team to stay inside of a number against a bad defensive team. And it's been the ask for the New York Knicks in the last game. They stayed inside of that with relative ease. And I think they're going to be able to do this here again. You're seeing like 5 juiced in other spots, 5.5, so you mentioned, Femi. I don't think you would get back up to 6, so I grab 5.5 with the New York Knicks.
And so how about the Timberwolves? I mean, what did you make a play in this game today against? I know you know that it's must win for Minnesota. Did you make a play in this one?
No, Michael. So I've got my future here on Minnesota. I took a little piece of Denver on the series price when they were down 2-0 over at Circa. So this is one of those where I want to sit back and just see what's going to happen. But I'll say this. You know, I do think the market, and I wrote about this today too, like, I think the market's getting this right, and you're seeing some spots drive this up to 3. You know, Circa, where Spemi's sitting at right now, is -3, -115 to the favorite side. So you're starting to see some marginal support here for the Timberwolves. And I do think that's the right side. Like, I think that their game on Friday, you get a little off kilter with the foul calls early, with your best wing defender having to sit with 3 fouls and 9 minutes left to go in the second quarter, and then it kind of stumbles away from there. But I think that this team is much better defensively than what we saw them in that game on Friday night, and they are better on offense. And I don't expect those guys that I mentioned to go a combined 2 of 11 from 3-point range again, especially on their home floor. If you're out in Denver, right, you tend to know what role players don't really play that well on the road, but you're at home, you expect a pretty decent bounce back here. I do think that Minnesota is the side. I would agree with the market in the way that it's heading right now.
We got about 45 seconds left here, JVT. Do you trust the Celtics enough to lay -120 for them to win the NBA title?
Not the title, no. I mean, like, we've kind of seen these weird game 2 blips. And guys, whoever they get coming out of the West, like, they're going to play clutch time basketball. It's going to be hard, whether it's Minnesota, Denver, Dallas, OKC. It is going to be a much tougher road, and you're going to have to figure out your clutch time issues in the NBA Finals. You have to do it quickly because you're not really going to probably play competitive basketball for a while, and I think that worries me to lay a price like that. So I don't think for the NBA Finals, Femi, no.
The overwhelming favorite, they have been
great
all
work,
season.
JVT. Yeah,
excellent stuff there. If you want more of that great work, VSiN.com. JVT writes about all these games every single day. You should be listening and reading all of the stuff that he does, because this is the time to go ahead and cast some of those bets in the association. Also, check out VSiN Primetime, 6 to 9 Eastern Time weekdays here on the Sports Betting Network. JVT, good luck with all the bets. Be well. Enjoy the basketball today, man.
Thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
Good stuff there from Jonathan Von Tobel. Joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, our VSiN senior NBA analyst. That's the thing with Boston. They're as good as they are. Do you trust them at that price? Remains to be seen.
Yeah, no, and we have to thank Mrs. Von Tobel for letting JVT not have to cook her breakfast and get on our show here today.
Well, it's early out west.
It's hard to get people on Mother's Day.
He's still got time. It's early out west, Michael. We'll wrap things up on the other side.
All right, good.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSiN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Welcome back. It's the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Thank you to Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, who joined us in the last segment. JVT always strong with his analysis. Make sure you check out all of his work at VSiN.com as well if you're betting the NBA. I guess this is a time for us, Michael, to give our final thoughts before we get into some more NFL news and notes. Our final thoughts on what we think is going to happen in these NBA games later on this afternoon and in the evening. We'll start off with this Knicks and Pacers game. We're back to 5.5 in some spots, total 219, with some interest now coming in late here on the Pacers as we sit here about 4 hours to tip.
You know, I mean, look, you have to marvel at the Knicks and their rotation and the heart of their team in terms of the minutes they play, losing players. As JVT said, I mean, they're up 9 in the fourth quarter with a chance to win that game without OG, you know. And so I think I'm going to take the points here. They just have such a resiliency. And at the end of the day, Indiana's defense is always a concern. You know, it's always a concern. So I think I would like to take the points. But I'm always nervous about when is that fatigue ever going to set into the Knicks? You know, when are they going to be exhausted? I just don't think Brunson's going to go 10 for 26 from the floor again.
Yeah, I mean, if it was going to set in, wouldn't it have set in by now? This it feels like they just have the never-ending engine that's going on at the New York Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I keep saying. Like, at what point are, and actually, they got more rest in this game without him. You know, he played Burks, you know, he put Precious into the starting lineup. He only played 22 minutes. But look, this is resilient. Although they shot well, it wasn't a question of that. It's just a question of can they close the game out? And, you know, and how are they going to call the fouls on Brunson that he seems to always get called?
Well, it's Tony Brothers who's officiating this game, so I think we might see Brunson make a couple trips to the free throw line, to say the least. Real quick, a better choice that our producer Elliot put together, NBA versus NFL. Would you rather bet Brunson over 32.5 points today or Dak Prescott over 4,150.5 passing yards this season at even money?
They're both even money. I think I want to take Brunson today because I get the money immediately. I don't have to
wait.
Smart man. So I think I'll take Brunson here.
Smart man. Get paid out today. Why would you wait for January 12th when you can get paid out on May 12th? I do think Brunson goes over that points prop. That's what I'm going to have in the betting card.
Obviously, our unbelievable producer Elliot knows nothing about present value of money. Obviously, that, you know, so.
Time is money, Elliot. Time is money. You got to factor that in. The opportunity cuts. If you tie it up with Dak, you can't bet on other stuff. So let's go ahead and bet this Jalen Brunson right now. 32.5. I'm going over that one as well. I also, as you, I do like the Knicks in this game today. I'll put a bet on that one at 5.5. It's going to hang out here in 5.5. I'll grab Knicks plus 5.5. I think you can do worse things than just betting the underdog the rest of the games in this series. I think that even like when New York is favored, when we go back to Madison Square Garden for game 5, I'm sure they'll still be in that 5-6 point range like they were in games 1 and 2. I think you should bet Indiana in that spot. I think both of these teams don't play blowouts. They play close games because the Pacers can't defend, and the Knicks only got about 6-7 guys, so they're not running anybody out the gym. So I think you're going to get a close game the rest of the way. So I think betting the underdog might be the way to go the rest of the way this series.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, every time you think it's something, you know, it's always a close game. There's been no separate. It goes down to the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, and Brunson has been able to make those shots. Now, he didn't in this game. He made that great three, but he wasn't able to get the three off in a decent look to tie the game up.
What about game 4 tonight in the Western Conference semifinals? T-Wolves with a 2-1 series lead. They're now laying 3 at home, total 204.5. Michael, I think whoever wins this game will win the series in Minnesota later on tonight.
Me too. And I think I'm going to take Denver here, just the experience. I think Denver, you know, I think they have a heart of a champion. They came out, they played well. I know Minnesota's a good young team. But I think I'm going to lean Denver here just to take the points. I'm going to follow the Femi Abebefe, take the underdog, take the points, make it a close game. I'm going to follow that program.
Any money line for you? Plus 120?
I don't bet. So it's just like, yeah. To me, I don't feel great about the bet, though. I got to be honest. I don't see how anybody could feel good about betting it because Minnesota is so damn good. And they had a bad game. It's the first time they didn't cover. It's the first time they didn't win in the playoffs. So is that trend going to continue? I think they're young players. Look, they're not young. I mean, Gobert is an older player. Carl Anthony Towns has been playing for a long time. And Anthony Edwards is clearly going to be, but as JVT said, when Jade McDaniels gets his third foul early, all of a sudden the game changes. Mm-hmm. You know, I have no confidence in it. I'm just taking the points. I could see Minnesota winning. I just think Minnesota is really good, and you can't overlook them, just like Oklahoma City Thunder. But the void in Oklahoma City Thunder is they're one player short. I think what JVT said is true.
Yep.
They don't have a power forward that can dominate the game with size. That's the hardest thing to get in the NBA is somebody who is 6'9", who can run the floor like LeBron, who can do all the, and rebound and do that. When you don't have that, when you have Josh Giddey trying to play that role, it always creates a mismatch. It's like, again, it becomes back to football. When you don't have a great three technique on defense, it's hard. It becomes painful. You've got a substitute to get a rusher in. When you have a three technique that can win first, second, and third down against any formational group, it really changes your defense.
Yeah, our guy Chet, he's battling. He's physical, but you can only do so much at 130 pounds or however much Chet Holmgren weighs. Like he's trying to fight his butt off there, but it's a little bit difficult when you're light beating him up on the glass there. The Dallas Mavericks are in this Denver Minnesota game. I'm invested in the Nuggets as I made the bet for them to win the series when we had TG on Monday. So I had that, like, that's sort of my bet for this game. So I'm just gonna go ahead and let that one ride. I just really want to see, what does Jamal Murray look like in the early goings of this game? Was it the rest, the 3 days off that helped him for game three? Now there's only less than 48 hours for this game. How does that factor into this thing? If he can't really push off of that calf or find that explosion, does it look like what we saw in games one and two? I think that's the biggest thing for me in this spot. So I'm going to sit back and watch it. I'm going to be sweating out my ticket that I bet for the Nuggets to win this series at +118. And that'll be my wager for this game. But it'll be a sweaty one later on this evening. Nuggets and the T-Wolves. We'll see what happens in the Twin Cities. All right, we got a few minutes left here. Let's wrap up with some NFL news. Our Nesson audience, I'm sure they've known this by now, but for those of you out there who are not in the Foxborough, New England area, the New England Patriots named Elliot Wolf their executive vice president of player personnel. What does this mean, I guess, for the front office structure of the Patriots? And I guess, what should we be interpreting from this news of New England hasn't really given Wolf a role until right now, at least getting a title that is?
Well, he's had this role all along, and I'm happy for Elliot, and I think Elliot will do a really good job. He's a good evaluator of talent. You know, clearly, I think what we have seen from the Patriots since Bill Belichick has left is they have now become a collaborative effort. I think when you look at Jaheim Bell the other day on head coach Mayo, he said, I didn't even know he was a head coach until they told me. He was like one of the players. You know, I like coaches like that. They hang out with the players and around the building. This is the complete opposite of what they had before. So Elliot will run the personnel department, but there's a collaboration. I think you have certain people involved. Jonathan Kraft is ultimately the final voice, along with Robert Kraft. I mean, they're going to run the team. They can say they're fans, but they're going to run the team. And when they and all the decisions are going to be made of a collaborative effort that goes towards there. And Elliot's going to have to report to somebody as we move through it. And I think same thing with Mayo. I think Mayo has decentralized everything. As he said this week, you know, Alex Van Pelt's running the offense. I mean, I think I saw Mayo walk on the field. I didn't think he had a sheet in his hand. You know, the defense is going to be run. The offense is going to be run. The King game, he's going to be overseeing the team and trying to spread the happiness and the joy that is going to try to permeate through the building because everybody felt they worked too hard. It was too hard under Bill. We'll see how long that lasts. That never works. I just want you to know that, but we'll see how long it goes.
We're going to, I guess, work efficiently, I guess is what they're saying. But, I mean, who knows? We'll see how this plays out. In the statement. Collaborative effort.
Yeah, come on.
In the statement, it said, Wolf's responsibilities will include the overall direction of the personnel department, the management of the salary cap, and in control of the 53-man roster. But real quick before we get out of here, I mean, how many GMs or de facto GMs even have final say in roster control? It's not as many, I think, as fans would think.
Yeah, no, because, I mean, look, it's such a fallacy who has control of the 53. There's 60-some players on the team. You can only dress 46. Like, who's deciding on what 46 to dress? That's key. And then player 47 to 60 should be the development of the team. It shouldn't be just guys to hang around. So, you know, I'm happy for Elliott. I think Elliott deserves this role. I think he'll do a really good job. I think the coaches are really tasked here to come together and really formulate the team, because Mayo's just going to be the overseer.
All right. Well, that does it for this edition of The Lombardi Line. Michael, enjoy the rest of the day. I know you guys have some Mother's Day stuff planned out there in Ocean City. Enjoy
Absolutely.
It. Have some fun. For our producer, Elliott Bowman, the entire crew behind the glass. Too. I'm Femi Bebefe saying good luck with all the bets. The Handle with Matt Brown and Mike Somich is up next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.